Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave, the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program on Health Star Worldwide, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. They say that there are only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Join Dave and his guests now and every Tuesday at noon Pacific on Radio Star Worldwide as they share practice tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help get you through this day so you can live your caregiver life more fully and abundantly. Now, here's your caregiver host, Dave Nassani.
From Los Angeles, the big LA, welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land, and it's a big land. I am Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous Radio Star Worldwide Radio Network. Yes, folks, I am the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. And we have an exciting show planned for you today. I don't think I've ever had an occupational therapist on before. This is our very first occupational therapist, Wendy Keller. She's going to answer your caregiver questions, so stay tuned. You will not want to miss this show. Hey, if you're new to the show, and we get many new listeners every week, especially from the Blab Television Network, I am your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every single kind. The one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring, and they are selfless, and they are sacrificial, and oh yeah, they are very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. I mean everybody. Folks, learn a lesson from the airlines. In the event of an emergency, put your oxygen mask on first before you attempt to help your loved one with their mask, because they know from experience that if you don't do that, you will most likely black out and you won't be of any good to anybody with anything. Got that? Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this other thing as if we didn't have enough things going on. Ouch. Unfortunately, folks, only one way out of the grief process. Got to go through it. Can't go around it, over it, under it. Got to go through it. And we hopefully can help you through your grief and your loss if you let us, if you happen to feel like you're stuck. Hey, I want to thank my last week's guest, Tammy Bacco, and her wonderful advice that she gave us. So you can tune into that show on my website, caregiverscaregiver.com. That's caregiverscaregiver.com. You can listen to any show we've done here. We've got over 100 of them. And just check it out. They're on recorded podcasts and YouTube videocasts if you don't like staring at the walls. What else have I got to say? Well, you know what? Just for doing, go into my website, and we have this quiz called Are You a Candidate for Burnout? And if you take that quiz, you know what I'm going to do for you? I'm going to send you a copy of my very first book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. So if you have some unbelievable hardships in your life, you need this book. So check it out. It's absolutely free if you take our quiz, and you'll also find out if you're a candidate for burnout, and we give you some tips and clues on what to do about that. All right, enough of that. We are starting our show. We were having trouble getting our guest on. I see she's not signed in yet. Wendy, are you there? She's almost signed in. Well, let me visit and welcome my wonderful co-host, Adrian, the lovely Adrian Gruber, who currently is up to 150, 160, who knows how many it is, 1,000 followers. Not there yet. But soon. I was just checking, you know, 4 short months ago, Adrian, you were at 80,000. So in 4 months, you've picked up 150 minus 80. What? Wow. Amazing. You must give me your secret. So how was your week? You had a migraine last week and couldn't join us.
There are tons of caregivers out there that do need our help and have to find us.
Right. Well, I hope you're feeling better.
I am. Thank you very much.
So what brings those migraines on?
Stress.
Stress? Do you have stress in your life, Adrian? you need to take the advice of our guest two times ago with the relaxation techniques and the
have you tried that again? I do it very well. It doesn't last very long, but that's me. Have a high stress level.
That's good. But I should also introduce our engineer, used to be Blade, but now he calls himself Sammy. And he never shows us his picture, so I don't know if that's he's really, really good looking or he's really, really not good looking. I don't know.
Definitely good looking.
That's not Blade anymore.
I know. Say hello, Sammy.
Hello, how's it going?
Good. Well, he has a nice voice. I can imagine what he looks like.
Do you want to see the man behind the curtain, the Wizard of Oz type thing?
Absolutely.
I do.
Let me see if I can fix the camera. Hold on.
I bet you're better looking than that mixer. Wendy, how are we doing? Really? And the title of the show is Occupational Therapist Wendy Keller, etc.
Yeah.
Push it again, because I didn't see it.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to try unplugging it and removing it.
Should I send her the link?
How would you send it to her?
By email.
I've already sent it to her by email. I think she's having trouble with her email.
Yeah.
She seems to be I see something here. Follow Wendy Keller. But how can I get her? All right, dead air. Sammy, are we ever gonna see your face?
I'm working on moving the camera right now.
Oh. Don't worry about it. Too much trouble.
No, don't worry, I'm gonna get it, don't worry.
So, Wendy, where are you at now? What do you see? Do you see something that says call in?
I see lots of things.
Do you see my face? Adrian's face? Anybody's face?
About to see my face.
You have to tell us what you see, Wendy. Okay.
Chrome trying to open.
So how's her voice, Sammy? Can you hear her good enough?
Yeah, sounds good.
Via my phone? Okay, well, Wendy, we're going to start the show. I'm going to put your picture up there so at least they'll see how beautiful you are. And heads up.
Well, if we get this to go, it might actually start at some point. And I'll talk until it decides to work. How about that?
All right. So, Wendy, you're an occupational therapist, and yes. I've never had one on the show before. I was doing some research on some questions that are frequently asked of occupational therapists. I've got some of my own, but first I want to ask you, what are the most common questions that you are asked by caregivers?
The most common question is, what am I supposed to do to help you or to help my loved one with regards to occupational therapy? And I'd say that probably the most important thing is to actually be present at the session, because it's common that we see the caregivers say, okay, you're here, and
check out.
They want to know what we're supposed to do, but then they go, well, you're here, so I'm going to go do something else.
Yeah, so... What percentage of caregivers do that to you? Half?
Oh, I'd say more like 80%.
Oh, my.
Or 90%.
Does that surprise you, Adrian?
Yeah, I'm curious. Is it because they're overburdened, and when you're there, it's they're free?
I can't hear her, so.
Oh, she's saying, is it because they're overburdened, and when you come in, they look at as they get a break? So don't go away.
Being a caregiver takes a special person with passion and compassion. But even you can become a little burned out from time to time. The Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show was developed to help you overcome obstacles, adversity, and burnout, as well as just having a place to rest, relax, and recharge your batteries. We've all been there, and you're not alone. Now, you can take the Caregiver's Caregiver with you. Get the top 25 radio shows in convenient form that plugs right into your USB car stereo or computer. Learn the techniques, tips, and encouragement we all need to better handle the day-to-day challenges. For around $1 per show, just $29.77, get the credit card-sized USB card to have with you anytime you need a caregiver's pick-me-up. Just go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com and order yours today. Go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com now. Consider it an investment in you, and ultimately, an investment in them. Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and tune into Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver radio program on Radio Star Worldwide, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. With roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, it's about one-third of the population. That means everybody probably knows somebody caring for a loved one. They say that there are only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Mothers of special needs children, family members caring for elderly parents, spouses, siblings, or friends caring for disabilities such as Alzheimer's, dementia, cancer, stroke, heart disease, diabetes, muscular dystrophy, AIDS, autoimmune diseases, the list goes on. Join Dave and his guests every Tuesday at 12 noon Pacific on Radio Star Worldwide as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. You'll start feeling better in no time as you begin to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help you get through the day and to live life more fully and abundantly.
So I think she was saying, Adrian, that yeah, it's like, as a caregiver, I can speak that, you know, okay, a therapist is coming, it's an opportunity for me to go shopping or something like that. And, you know, a lot of the cases, elderly people get a lot of broken bones, especially hips, right? And a hip bone takes a long time to recover from. Some people never recover when they break their hip, right?
Yes.
And so occupational therapists, you know, the ones who are supposed to get them back going again. And, you know, that's tough when you're 92 or something like that. But
my sister-in-law is an occupational therapist who works with children. And I once asked, what does an occupational therapist have to teach a child? And she said, how to play. So that, because that's a kid's job. So you've got parents who are dealing with children with disabilities, or they're not, didn't call them disabilities anymore, right? And they have to learn, I would think, how to work with their own child.
Yeah.
So we're not just talking about people who are working with their parents or even their spouses, but it's this huge spectrum.
Yeah. You know, I've told the story before about when my wife suffered a stroke and she, you know, lost the right side of her body, and she's a gourmet cook. She's type A personality. So she wants to get back in the kitchen and do all this stuff. And her mother at the time was, you know, helping out with caregiving when I was at work. And she would always come to her aid. Oh, no, honey, let me get that. Oh, no, I'll do the meals. Oh, no, let me, don't reach for that. You might fall. And whenever I was there, I would just do the opposite. I would encourage her. I says, come on, stand up a little higher, step on your toes. I think you can reach it, you know. And she would look at me, her mother, as being cruel and insensitive. And so when the occupational therapist came, she says, oh, no, you are doing the right thing. You know, we need to push them. You know, otherwise you're going to create this dependent creature who will feel like they can do anything. And as a result, my wife, gosh, God bless her, she can do anything. I come home, she's done the laundry, she's done the cooking, she's cleaned up, she's, you know, she can bathe herself. I mean, she's like a one-arm wallpaper hanger. I wonder, well, where are the elves that were helping you today? So I like to pat myself on the back and take credit because I was very therapeutic during her occupational therapy. Yeah, we were talking about how when my wife had a stroke and her right side was paralyzed, you know, I was always pushing her and, you know, encouraging her to reach those top shelves because she loves to cook. And her mother was saying, oh, no, you're cruel. You know, let me get that for you. You know, let me do the cooking. You know, let me do this. Let me do that. And really, she would have created a dependent person. And on the contrary, I created a very independent person. You see a lot of that? Because you met my wife, right?
Yes, yes.
She's very independent, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. I would completely agree that she is very independent. And I was very impressed with how well she takes care of herself and takes care of really you and your
household. Yeah, she does take good care of me. Probably the worst breaks, bone breaks, are our hips. We were talking about when you were gone. That's a hard one to overcome, isn't it? Especially if you're older. Some people never overcome the hip, right? Puts them in a nursing home, and then chances are they're not going to make it. Is there hope for hip breaks? Or does it depend on how old you are?
Absolutely.
A hip break is not necessarily a death sentence, right? Even if you're older.
It's not necessarily a death sentence, but it is certainly a situation where it is very, very difficult to overcome. It's very difficult to get back to the point where you're able to really be independent again. A lot of times what happens with people is they are expecting to completely recover back to total independence. That prior level of function is kind of a catchphrase that we use a lot in as therapists. And I'd say that the hip is the one thing that people have the hardest time returning to their prior level of function. When it comes to the other types of things like a knee, people are able to recover back to their prior level of function much more easily than the hip.
That's encouraging.
What?
I said that's very encouraging. I need knee surgery.
Well, I myself have had both of my knees replaced. And, you know, I'm able to even crawl around on the floor. I'm able to squat down and, you know, do all kinds of things. Although crawling around on the floor isn't my first choice of activities. I can do it, despite the fact that I've had both of my knees replaced. So you're certainly capable of recovering an enormous amount of function, despite the fact that this joint was replaced. Mm-hmm. As for with the hip, very, very difficult. It takes a much longer time to recover. There are a lot more restrictions while recovering. And things like you can't bend over more than 50 or more than 90 degrees. Well, if you can't bend over more than 90 degrees, you can't reach your feet. You can't put on your shoes. You can't put on your socks. hard to, you know, you can't reach the floor at all, basically. And that's something that's really challenging because until that hip really heals up, that's the way that it's going to be. And that's mm-hmm. a lot longer than, I mean, say everything goes 100% according to plan with the hip replacement surgery. Everything goes smoothly. You're healing up beautifully. There's no infections. There's no complications. Everything's wonderful. Your pain is under control. Everything's great. But, you know, it's still going to take probably 4 months or so before those restrictions are lifted.
I just wanted to know if there's a difference in the recuperation if the person has broken their hip or the surgery is elective.
Usually if it's elective, well, first of all, it's probably not really truly elective. You follow what I mean? Like, there's a really good reason that socket, there's probably so much arthritis or joint degeneration going on mm-hmm. that it kind of become inevitable. Like, they really can't function any longer. And so it's, you know, there's some kind of reason that has happened. Usually if that's the case, there's something else, you know, one joint is, it's very rare that one joint is an isolated case when it comes to joint degeneration. So we don't usually just see lots of arthritis in just one place if somebody is having that kind of a situation where they have so much degeneration in their right hip, say, mm-hmm. that they have to have a joint replacement. It's extremely unlikely that left hip is in pristine condition, if you follow what I mean.
Yes, totally.
So that left hip's probably going to be pretty sore unless it's already been replaced.
And so do you recommend one or both at the same time? Even with the knees, do you recommend one knee or both at the same time? And the third question, here's a triple braided question here. Adrian obviously admitted she's waiting until she can't stand it anymore. Is that pretty common? And is it wise?
Okay. Question one was, you know, do you do one or both hips at the same time?
Yeah.
Again, okay. Both of those questions are, I defer to the doctor. That's a doctor question. Everybody's health is different. Everybody's situation is different. I have never personally seen somebody where they did both hips at the same time, but that's not to say it's never been done, but I've just never seen it personally. That's a call for a doctor to make between, you know, the patient and the doctor after considering the entire medical situation. As for
the knees, what are two?
I've seen that more often, or I should say more often, but I have seen it. I personally did it. The reason that I personally chose to do it and my doctors were supportive of it was because I am younger. My health is pretty good. My reasoning behind it was that I am still working and I did not want to be out of work as long as it would have been to have one done and then the other done, and it was clear to everybody involved that I was going to have both done. Even though the recovery time to have both done at the same time was going to be longer. It was considerably shorter than having one than the other done. So it made sense. But again, that's a call between, you know, patient and doctor considering the entire picture. Huh. Now, going on to the next question, which was, does it make sense to wait or does it make sense to have it done sooner? So, which is the sooner versus later argument. So I was 42 when I had mine done. My brother will probably have to have the same knee surgery done on both of his knees as well. He is 37. My dad had both of his knees replaced at 67 and 68, one than the other. My dad has reasonably good health, and he recovered from both knee surgeries relatively well. He's now back, you know, in the garden, as we call them, having his dirty days where he's digging around and doing all kinds of stuff. So he's doing quite well. As for the myself, I already said that I was doing okay, and my brother is saying that, you know, he's like, well, I'm going to try to wait until I'm more in my 50s. We'll see if he makes it that far. So that's kind of three different people, kind of with similar, you know, genetic makeup, making the decision sort of differently.
Let me interrupt you there for a moment, Wendy. Mm-hmm. When you come to a place, a home, you do mostly home healthcare, right?
Yes.
So are most of your patients, you know, the disabled loved ones, or are they the caregivers of disabled loved ones, or are they both?
I'm sorry, say it again?
Are most of your patients, when you come to home, are they the caregivers watching after someone? Or are they the actual disabled ones who have a caregiver?
I am mostly seeing the patients. And then I consider the entire family to be the people that I am taking care of. And when we are... One of the things that is part of our makeup of the situation is reduction of caregiver burden is one of the reasons that is a legitimate reason for us to be giving skilled therapy that Medicare will pay for example, and really anything Medicare will pay for, the other insurance companies will pay for. So reduction of caregiver burden could be, for example, I have a patient who is not been able to feed herself in years and is now just starting to be able to feed herself a few bites through the help of occupational therapy. And it's not that she is feeding herself 100%, but she is starting to be able to take a few bites on her own. Well, by being able to feed herself, or maybe, you know, one portion of the meal, that means that she can maybe start to eat, you know, part of the meal on her own, and the caregiver can do something else while, you know.
I have a question. When you're teaching someone, let's say, how to feed themselves again, do you recommend implements and do you teach them how to use special spoons and cups and all that stuff?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We use built-up handles for spoons or forks or knives or whatever to make them bigger. We use weighted hand utensils if necessary. Sometimes the depends on the diagnosis. If somebody has, say, Parkinson's and they're shaking a lot, a weighted utensil is very helpful. Actually, it may be at any diagnosis if their hands are shaking a lot and they're having a lot of trouble with that tremor and holding, you know, it's like the food shake box, for example, right? If you have a weighted utensil, then that weighted utensil will hold that hand more steady so that food isn't being shaken off as much. And that gives that person more independence. And they feel better. And the caregiver doesn't have to help them as much. And everybody involved feels better about the whole situation because they're able to, you know, feed themselves. And that's huge.
The reason I bring this up.
One thing, right?
Sorry for interrupting, Wendy, but the reason I bring this up is because so many times, you know, and I know Adrian agrees because we talk to the same people, caregivers. And how many times, Adrian, have you heard, you know, someone's taking care of a Parkinson's patient or a stroke patient or you name it, and the caregiver is like almost crippled themselves, you know, both knees are gone or a hip is gone, and you know, they're just putting off this surgery because they're caring for this person. And in essence, they're kind of more disabled than the person they're caring for.
There's so many kinds of different things. I mean, I know, you know, people who have terrible backs and terrible hips and terrible knees, and they're taking care of somebody else. And
they should be in the hospital, and instead they're lifting heavy things,
running
this person around in their wheelchair.
They want to be at home and be independent, but they need to be shown how to lift themselves up, let alone being shown how to lift up somebody else.
I'm so glad you brought that up. Going back to the very first thing that came up, which is when I said, you know, it's important that the caregivers be there when the therapists are there. If the caregivers are there, we will teach you how to lift, how to, you know, shift someone, how to do
these things
so that you don't get hurt. And if you tell us your injury, we can say, okay, here's how you protect your knee. Here's how you protect your back. Here's what I want you to go get for yourself. Here's the kind of back brace that you should go get. Here's the kind of knee support that you should go get. Here's, you know, you need to go to the doctor and get this kind of a thing. Maybe you need to go and get some therapy prescribed for you. And
so you do minister to the caregivers, not only to the patients. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, but how am I supposed to know that you have a bad back if you don't tell me?
Not there, especially if you're not there.
And if you're not there, I mean, I can't say, hey, you know, the way you're moving your mom is making your back worse. Let
right.
me show you another way to do this so that you're not making it worse. Let me show you, you know, a way to do
You've
this.
You've got to teach this person how to bathe the other person sometimes, just how to lift them into the shower or the tub, how to get them out.
Absolutely. That's my job, is to absolutely help you guys learn how to do transfers, to do bathing, and not only that, I want the patient to do more because I want them to increase their independence, which is another thing that Dave brought up. He was pushing his wife to be more independent as the caregiver. Well, I'm going to counsel you as the caregiver to push your loved one to do as much as possible. I'm going to say, okay, here's your homework. You need to use this to wash from, you know, your hip to your knee, or, you know, to this portion of your, you know, arm or whatever. I want you to do this much. And hey, caregiver, you're only allowed to help this much. And if you help more than that, you're not really helping your loved one. They need to do it. And the more you comply with our, you know, like home exercise program,
yes,
the stronger your loved one's going to get. And the less it's going to hurt you.
All right, listen, we need to take another break. And when we come back, I want to ask you the difference between physical therapy and occupational therapy and when to get one and when to get the other. So don't go away.
Being a caregiver takes a special person with passion and compassion. But even you can become a little burned out from time to time. The Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show was developed to help you overcome obstacles, adversity, and burnout, as well as just having a place to rest, relax, and recharge your batteries. We've all been there, and you're not alone. Now, you can take the Caregiver's Caregiver with you. Get the top 25 radio shows in convenient form that plugs right into your USB car stereo or computer. Learn the techniques, tips, and encouragement we all need to better handle the day-to-day challenges. For around $1 per show, just $29.77, get the credit card-sized USB card to have with you anytime you need a caregiver's pick-me-up. Just go to DaveTheCaregiver'sCaregiver.com and order yours today. Go to DaveTheCaregiver'sCaregiver.com now. Consider it an investment in you, and ultimately, an investment in them. One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is a touching story about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resembled that of both a Martha Stewart and Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. She met her husband Dave 21 years earlier. They had a wonderful fairy tale storybook-like courtship that soon culminated in their marriage. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where after 10 years, she received two black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left, finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn. She started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought them all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, their love then produced Rebecca. They all had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive. To survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope that everything happens for a reason and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone that meets her. Best-selling author Lynn Barrington says, "If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story from the heart. It is inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light." 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch, says, "Charlene just won't let the promises of God go, and she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror. As the Bible states, you will be encouraged by her testimony, regardless of what you're going through." Order your copy today from the author's website, onearmoneleg100words.com. And Dave and Charlene will personally autograph your copy. Enjoy.
And we're back with Wendy Keller, occupational therapist. So, Wendy, what's the difference between an occupational therapist and a physical therapist? Do your duties kind of overlap each other? And when do you get one? When do you get the other? For those that don't know.
Okay. So the similarities are we work together with regards to helping helping patients get stronger. When it comes to things like joint replacement and physical issues like recovering from surgery and that kind of thing, there's a lot. We tend to look a lot alike. Occupational therapists work on helping people get back to doing those things that they were able to do but are no longer able to do that are of great importance to them. But when a physical therapist is working with someone, they're focused more on the actual physical aspect of the
like exercises, stuff like that.
Yeah. So they're looking at, you know, how strong is someone, how well, what is their balance, those kinds of things.
So you're teaching them how to eat, how to cook, how to prepare things, how to reach for things, just right. in an occupational sense.
The physical therapists work on the, physical stuff. Occupational therapists are looking more at the actual activity. Mm-hmm. So if you're wanting to get back to being able to cook, we look at all aspects with regards to cooking. So we're interested in how well can you move around the kitchen? How well can you move a pan from one place to another?
With something like that, would you figure out how to move things and arrange a kitchen to make it easier for that person? Yeah.
The ergonomics, exactly. So to speak, of where things are.
So if a that's exactly where I was going to go. So if, for example, a person has weight restrictions, we would help them to figure out, okay, so you can use this pan and that pan, but not this other pan. Let's put these plates down here. Those plates are probably too big for right now. Why don't we put, so those can probably go up higher for now because, you know, you're not going to be using them anyway. Let's put this over here and that over there. And let's reorganize your kitchen for now because this is the way that your weight restrictions are for right now. And what kinds of foods do you want to prepare? Well, let's figure out how you're going to be able to do that safely because safety is very important. And within the confines of the restrictions, whatever they may be. And if there's no restrictions, it's also a matter of, let's going back to safety, making sure that if your balance is a little bit off or if you're just not as strong as you were, we need to make sure that, you know, if you don't have the strength to hold a can, you're not putting yourself in a situation where you're going to drop something that's very hot. So, you know, we would be doing, you know, evaluations of that kind of stuff. So, but that's kind of the more, there's two different kinds of things that we look at. We look at ADLs, which are the most basic level of taking care of yourself. That's dressing, bathing, grooming, feeding, and toileting. And the transfers that go along with those. So those are what we consider to be the absolute, basic taking care of yourself. And then there's what we call IADLs, which is the activities of daily living with independence. And those are things like cooking, cleaning. And when we say cooking, we're not talking about gourmet cooking. We're talking about like,
oh, you don't give cooking lessons, huh?
Well, I can, but no, I don't.
That's extra.
We're talking about useful things.
And so you work for a home, you do three different things. Like you work for a home health agency. You kind of do things on your own, and you work at a facility too. Remind me what it is you do.
So actually there's lots of different kinds of occupational therapy areas. We work with children, and a lot of times you'll see occupational therapy working in schools, or sometimes you'll see OTs working in the like preschool level even. You might see them in even like children's hospitals working with infants who might be having trouble with, you know, there's all kinds of things that are going on with little itty bitty babies sometimes. So from basically birth through and into the school's level, there's a lot of things that they work on, like behavior issues, handwriting, focus, control, being able to, you know, concentrate in schools so that they can be successful in the classrooms. And doing well in school, because school is an occupation in and of itself. And so then moving on into the lifespan, working with teenagers, not just also in schools, but also in psychological areas, working with them in terms of like drug prevention, those kinds of things. And then working with adults, both young adults and older adults, physical therapy or physical disabilities, whether they're, you know, any kind of surgeries or strokes, those kinds of things. And that's from that point, you know, 18 through 100, 105, doesn't matter. I work in hospitals. I've worked in what's called an acute rehab facility, where somebody might be coming out of the hospital, but they're not really ready to go home. But they're able to do real intense rehab. And then there's skilled nursing facilities where somebody's not ready to go home, but they you know, they need some therapy, but they need closer management of their care. I work with them in home health, where somebody is at home. And I still work with children.
So you're busy.
So I'm a busy girl. I also work with people who need ergonomic assessments of their homes, coming home, and they need someone to help them figure out how to set up their home so that they are safe for their loved ones to be, you know, in that space.
Yeah.
That way.
What'd you say, Adrian?
I was going to say that way it works very much for the caregiver, teaching somebody, making somebody's home safe,
right?
So that you don't have to be there for them constantly.
Yeah.
And it's all about the caregiver with this show. Well, listen, I can't believe how fast this hour has gone. Thank you so much, Wendy, for coming on. In the next couple of minutes, just tell us if somebody wants to get a hold of you or has further questions or wants to employ you or whatever. How can someone get a hold of you?
My email address is lkpressotr@me.com. And that's probably the easiest way to get a hold of me. You could also call me. I answer the phone, and you can call me anytime, and if I don't answer, please leave me a message. My number is 661-714-1455, and I'm happy to answer questions. I'm happy to, help out in any way that I can and do whatever I can help.
And the number one more time, 714?
661-714-1455.
1455. All right. Anything else to say, Adrian?
No. I asked my questions.
Well, Wendy, thank you again so much. We appreciate you coming on. And I guess I'll see you. For those who don't know, since my wife broke her ankle in a power wheelchair accident, she kind of fell over a curb because she didn't see it. She didn't have her seatbelt on. So Wendy's been coming in and helping her out, and appreciate all you're doing. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And don't forget, we're here every Tuesday at noon Pacific time. So God bless you, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program with Dave Nassani. Join Dave every Tuesday at 12 noon Pacific. Or catch the program anytime, 24/7, right here on Radio Star Worldwide.